Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to the show. It's Tuesday, December 10th.
It's a very happy Tuesday for me.
Is it really? Why
yes,
is that?
Because last night was Monday Night Football.
Oh.
And the Bears played the Cowboys. And we won.
I guess they did win if you're
Yay.
That happy, huh?
Yes.
What was the score? Do you remember?
Oh, my gosh. We killed it. It was like 45-28.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yes.
These Cowboys are, you know, hopeless, man. I'm telling you, America's team. They
I
haven't
know.
Been America's team for 30 years.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh, Tony Romo, blah, blah, blah. Like, ah, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So
exactly.
It was a good game, right?
Yeah.
Where did you watch it? Did you go to a bar or something?
I went to the parlor, of course, as always.
Yeah. And do they have other Bear fans there, too?
Oh, yeah. The whole, like, back section, which is where, like, all my friends are. We take up, like, that whole area, and we hang up the Bears flag, and, that whole area is the only game is on. It's, like, a million TVs and the big projector screen, and it's all the, you know, Bears game. It's all Bears fans back
there. Are they all following the Bears because of you? Because I can't imagine they're all from Chicago, right?
There's quite a bit of – actually, you know, there's a few of my friends that are, like, diehard Bears fans, and they're not from Chicago.
Right.
Just, you know, people that, you know, grew up in other, you know, areas, not even specifically L.A., but just other places that didn't have, you know, a football team.
And
they've
right.
just come to love the Bears.
Right.
And it's just kind of by coincidence. Everybody just kind of congregates together. You know, it doesn't really, you know, matter if you're from there or not, but if you're a Bears fan, everybody's just – you know, and some people are just there just for the heck of it, just to watch Monday Night Football. And of course, there's a couple, you know, shameful Cowboys fans in there, but
and I'm sure everybody's happy to beat up on the Cowboys too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it was great. It was a fun time.
Good.
And also, you know, Mike Ditka, he made his speech during halftime.
Really?
And my friends, the same friends that bring the flag, you know, the Bears flag, they also had the traditional, like, you know, the sweater vest, you know, the Bears, like the classic Mike Ditka sweater.
Yeah.
And they had it hanging up too, like,
really?
On the other side by the flag. Yeah, it was great. It was great. It was like, we like owned that whole section of the bar. It was very touching.
Yeah.
It was like, aw. Mike Ditka. I mean, it was all kind of like before my time, but I mean, just like to the transition as a coach, you know, from like Lovie Smith was just no emotion, you know, and Ditka was like, wow, like crazy, you know. But I mean, I like our coach now. I think he's, you know.
Yeah.
It'll just,
but Ditka,
I think it'll
really
just
made the Bears to what they are today, you know.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, you know, he's really whipped them up into shape and they.
They retired his jersey number.
Yeah.
That's what the big deal was about.
Yeah, so and he was a good coach too.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
The coach. He was the coach.
The coach.
Mike Ditka. Love it.
All right, so football. And are you getting ready for the holidays? Have you started any shopping at all?
Christmas shopping?
Yeah.
I did a little bit with my mom when I was home for Thanksgiving.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense to buy it all here and then have to carry it over there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no, we don't really do like the crazy Black Friday deals. Like we don't wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to go shopping. I mean,
we're like a special person.
And it's just great because we go like later on, like in the afternoon or something. And it's not, I mean, it's still really busy because it's Black Friday, but it's not like super crazy packed.
Right.
But she's like, I just don't get it. What's the point? Why can't everybody just go at a regular hour when the store opens? Like, what's the big deal of, you know, making it begin at midnight?
Because they get some good deals, you know, and people, you know, figure if I can get a TV for a couple hundred bucks, I'll wait in line for a week. That's what they do. I mean, if you've seen those tents outside Best Buy.
No, but TVs are cheap nowadays. I mean, it's not, you know.
Yeah, like, but still, I mean, you know, if you can, people can that can save a few hundred bucks, they go, wow, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the thing also is that how many of those are going to be in stock, you know? I mean, you know, if everybody runs for them at midnight, then at 12:30, there's not going to be any more.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I just always found it to be a little bit ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, you know, but some people enjoy it. They camp out, they meet people.
I guess so.
But it's such a consumer society that we have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to buy things all the time. I'll bet you, you know, many people actually buy for themselves during the holidays too, you know?
Well, that's all they do. What, you think they're going to buy a TV for somebody else? Like, heck no, a good deal like that, that's all for themselves.
Right.
If you really think about it,
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the way it is. Those bigger items are more for themselves.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, plus you're in the mood for shopping, you know? So, I mean, you're already out there. Might as well. It's easiest to buy for yourself than for other people, you know?
I know.
So you just kind of do it.
I know it's hard to buy for other people, you know? That's kind of why,
really
like,
hard.
You know, I don't know. It's, we don't really do much of, like, of course, like, you know, we need a couple gifts to open just to keep, like, the tradition of, you know, surprise going. But most of the time now it's like if we're, you know, shopping or whatever, or my mom sees something that she wants because she's so hard to buy for.
Really?
My mom, she's like impossible.
She's very picky.
Yeah. So either like usually I try to like get her something and then something like funny and like, you know, like some kind of inside joke that's like memorable on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, that's how, you know, that's kind of how you got to do it with her because it's like, she's just so impossible. So we'll be like shopping somewhere. She'll be like, oh, these are cute, blah, blah, blah. And she'll be like, oh, we'll just get that now. That could be my Christmas present from you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right. But I'm like, gosh, that's so boring. Like, I want to think of something like funny and cute, you know, to give you to open so you can be at least a little bit surprised.
Yeah.
Let me be a little creative. Come on.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I gave her a sloth last year, stuffed animal sloth.
Oh, yeah?
She loves those.
The guy from Ice Age?
Yes. No, yeah. I actually got him for her actually a few years ago. But I got a sloth, like an ancient sloth from, you know, like the La Brea Tar Pits.
Oh,
have you ever
been
there?
Okay. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. We were there and like, you know, they had them and I just bought one. I'm like, oh, I'm buying it for myself. But then later I ended up giving it to her for Christmas with, like, you know, I had a whole like shrine around it, like the way I decorated it with like other gifts. It was really cute.
<That's>
little sloth baby.
All right, well, you know, we're getting I'm getting ready for the holidays. I'm enjoying the time, you know. It's always festive.
Yeah.
And it is exceptionally cold this year. We're not used to it, but you know, I mean, again, you know, we're crying over temperatures in the 40s and 30s, and there's people with 20, 30
and
below.
Everybody's in the snow.
But you know, I think at a certain point, it really stops being colder, you know. It just probably just feels like, you know, you're frozen.
It all feels cold.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter
frozen.
If it's like 5 degrees difference.
Exactly.
Like, it's still cold. My skin is like still like dry and itchy and driving me crazy.
I know. I got to walk around with lotion all the time.
I do. Actually, I have like two in my purse right now. Like, I don't know why I have two, but backups just in case. Because everybody sees you whip it out and they're all like, oh my gosh, can I have some? Is that lotion? I need some hand lotion.
Right.
Everybody sees you whip it out. Gosh, I shouldn't have said it like that. Never mind. Don't quote me on that, all right?
Okay, we won't.
Guys,
all
with
right,
your dirty minds.
Yeah,
I know
you
what y'all are thinking.
Yeah. You know guys, right?
You know I
what
do.
They're thinking. Yeah.
I do.
All right. Well, we're going to get to our guest now who's been sitting patiently. If you want to pull the microphone towards you because it's totally on the other side of the desk. Good morning. We have Mark Lester in the studio. Get closer to the mic when you talk, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How
hi,
are you?
Good. Welcome to
there
the
we
show.
Go.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, we sort of interrupted you from your phone and everything, but it's okay. So welcome to the show, Mark. And are you an L.A. native or Did you come from somewhere else?
I came from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, really?
I was 12 years old, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were born in Cleveland.
I was born in Cleveland.
So you know the cold, right?
I mean, it was freezing. We had snow above our house, and we had to dig out the front door open, and you'd just see snow, and you'd have to dig your way to get outside.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. So you're a director, writer, producer, and you've been involved with a lot of films. And you mentioned some of them to us. What are some of the biggest projects that you worked with?
Well, in the past?
Yes.
Yeah, I did. Well, the one that's most famous that people know is Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's
on American Movie Classics every night. Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
I never thought it'd end up like that, but it has.
That's cool. It's from some time ago, the 90s, 1980s, right?
Yeah, that was 1985.
Right.
You know, right after I did Firestarter, Drew Barrymore.
Oh, nice.
And Armed and Dangerous, Meg Ryan's first movie.
Uh-huh. So what's your capacity? Were you the producer, the director of
those directed
movies?
You directed
these movies.
Yes.
Wow.
And, you know, I produce a lot of films, direct films, and whatever. I like to make films, and so I just keep turning them out.
Sounds good. And are you working on something right now?
Right now, I just got back from Wales, where I did a movie called Dragons of Camelot, which I wrote the story and had the script written. It's King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And King Arthur dies, and the knights have to come back to save the kingdom and fight dragons that have been unleashed by a wicked queen.
Wow.
Yay. So, I love dragons.
We had all these beautiful castles in Wales, and it was cold there, too, believe me.
Really, huh? I'm sure.
That's an intense location.
Yeah. Right.
That's cool.
And then I directed and produced a movie called Poseidon Rex, which is like a Godzilla movie, which I shot down in Belize.
Really?
Central America.
Wow. So you do some movies like that as well, like not mainstream movies, right? But more like indies, is that what it is?
Yeah, they're right now, you know, a lot of movies for television or sci-fi or fantasy movies.
There's definitely a lot going on television, huh? I mean, every time I look, like you go on Netflix or Amazon and you get more TV shows to rent than films, you know, which is really funny, I think. But there's a lot going on television.
Yeah, everybody wants to get back into TV now. It used to be like a stigma. You were a theatrical film or a TV film. But now the lines have just merged together, and all actors and people in the industry, they want to do television with, you know, Netflix has House of Cards and, you know, very prestigious shows on HBO and all these channels.
So. Right. So why are these people wanting to move in that direction? I mean, the thing is, you know, because film always seems more more attractive to actors and stuff like that. Why do you think there's a move to television now?
I think there's a lot more money being spent in TV for a lot more projects, so the budgets are way higher in television than the independent film sector. So, you know, you have the big studio movies, which you hear about are $50, $100 million. But then, you know, below that, you have thousands of these small independent films, which are made for $50,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
And I have a distribution company as well, so we see a lot of them, you know, and it's hard to make a good film for that. So, you know, but if you do a House of Cards or Game of Thrones or something, those budgets are huge.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's interesting. So
those are both really good shows, by the way.
Yeah. People gravitate to those projects because there's more money involved and they're bigger and more prestigious shows than the independent film sector, which people are just gathering money up any way they possibly can.
Right. And all this innovation on television seems to appear with the pay cable channels, right? Because I guess they have the budgets to really create shows like that. Because you don't see there's some big shows on network television, but all these big shows that you hear about right now, those series, they seem to be on Showtime and HBO and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. The three major networks aren't doing that. Before. They're still doing the formula series type shows.
Right. Is that because they're tied down to the advertising business model where they don't have the budgets that pay TV might?
Yes, I think, which is like a going away, that model of having to bring advertisers, because people can TiVo the shows.
So, that's true.
Yeah, there's no reason to advertise. You're better off advertising on the internet or on these
True.
Hulu shows, or they don't need they don't even need advertisers on Netflix. You're a subscriber, and that's it.
That's true. Yeah, that works exactly with a subscription.
Sorry, just the timeout. 2 seconds. I mean, he called my number by accident. That's why the phone was ringing. I was like, gonna try to figure out a way to like speakerphone it and make this all work. I just told him to call in the show. But just really quick, Rough Cut Films. was I produced with them a film called Dead Girls, and they said that they met you like a year ago. So that's why he's calling in. He's like, I'm listening right now, and your guest, we know him, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, well, call into the show if you want to say hi. I don't call my phone.
All right.
Well, but, yes.
We'll have reminiscing.
Neil Fisher and Del Harvey.
Oh, sure. Great.
So that's so funny.
Yes.
I just had to like get that in there because I know they're all like listening right now and they're all really excited. So
right. So let's go back to the beginning. I mean, it fascinates me how you got into this and everything. So you grew up in Cleveland. Now you moved at what age, did you say?
12 years old.
12 years old. What happened then? Your family moved?
Or? Yeah, my family moved from Cleveland. My father was a court reporter, and there was a famous case in Ohio, the Dr. Sam Shepard murder case.
Yes.
And he was the court reporter. And so they got enough money to drive to California and come here and... He loved movies, my father. He made a film of the trip across the country, which I still have.
Really?
He wanted to be a film person, but never was. And so.
But you got the bug too, huh?
Yeah, well, I started out in politics managing campaigns. Like I ran the campaign for Henry Waxman's first campaign for state assembly.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was ran the Young Democrats in California for 5 years.
Interesting.
So I really wanted to be in politics.
Politics to film. Wow.
Yeah, well, then the first films I made were political films. So I thought, I'll make a movie, political films. And I did documentaries and short stuff, political movies. And then I made a feature that was successful called Steel Arena way back. And it was ended up in drive-ins. They were all over America, right?
Right.
So I said, cool. Wow, you know, you can make money and make films. And
yeah. Cool. But let's go back to when you were younger. So so your parents moved why? Because they liked California?
Because of the snow. It was
really
horrible winters. And everybody came to California.
Yeah. So they figured they'd come too. Had you guys been here before? I mean, did you know what you were moving
to? They made one trip to find a job for my father, and then we drove back. There was no planes.
So we drove
here and then drove back and then came the next summer and moved here. My grandmother was here right down the street from this office. And
oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
We moved into her apartment and house. Aww. You know, there we were.
So that must have been crazy.
And then we ended up in Sepulveda. I went to Monroe High, and then I went to State College.
So you essentially grew up here.
Basically
a native.
Yeah.
Seen the whole city where the tallest building was City Hall was 13 stories.
Really, huh?
And Bunker Hill was all American Indians living there. So I've been there a long time.
Very interesting. Okay. That's all downtown now, downtown L.A.
And I'm only 40 still, so it's amazing.
Yeah, I know. You seem pretty young. So you went to school here in the Valley?
Yes, in Monroe.
I see. Yeah. And then what did you do after that? Did you think you were going to go to college? Or
no, I wanted to be in politics.
You wanted to be in politics?
Yeah,
from that age already? I mean,
yeah, since I was
17, 18?
15 years old, I met my best friend still, Henry Waxman, and then he ran for president of the Young Democrats, and I ran the organization for 5 years in California.
Wow.
I ran around with Jerry Brown and
you
know everybody like
so
that.
How did you get interested in that? I mean, that's kind of a young age to be involved with politics, you know, like 15, 16 years old.
Right, yeah, my father was like really political, and so
I see.
You know,
so
we went
got sucked in.
He was like a left winger, and we snuck into John Birch Society meetings to see what the right wing was doing. I got drafted, you know, and I ended up in Berkeley and working in a hospital. And I got involved in films with a documentary film company. And I loved that. I thought, this is better than anything, you know, you can think of.
So you were drafted for what? For Vietnam?
Yeah.
Really? So what year was that?
1970,
huh?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So, but you didn't have to go overseas or anything.
No.
You
they ended up in Stanford. They sentenced me to a hospital.
Sounds good, man.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Throw me in the briar patch. So I was in, Berkeley Hospital.
Right.
And then I started making films, and a couple of years later, there was Trisha Nixon's daughter was getting married. So I thought, I'll make a comedy about her. Mm-hmm. Marriage, starring the Cockettes, who were like a popular drag queen group at the time. All the characters were drag queens, right?
Uh-huh.
So it was like a Rocky Horror Picture Show is the best example for its time. You know, nobody had done anything like that.
Right.
And this film I opened in theaters myself, you know, because nobody would touch something like that. I used all the real people's names. So the thing, you know, there were lines around the block, all this money came in, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is like a good business.
Yeah.
And,
but how did you go from the politics to the filmmaking?
Well, then I did the first, that was a film. And, oh, I just.
I mean, you were working at the hospital and everything.
Yeah, then
and
I started helping out at this documentary film company in San Francisco.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. So that's how you started connecting with films and stuff.
Right, and I made a film called Twilight of the Mayas about the Mayan Indians in Mexico. Mm-hmm. But it was a political film. I thought, oh, you know, I'll go down there and they'll. You know, revolt.
Right.
They had all suppressed and so forth. So I started like in that vein, and then I got into entertainment. Like through the first feature was like a feature, like it was like a documentary with drama and about auto car racers. And the Rolling Stone blew it up into a big film. And from then on, I just started making films. You know,
wow,
that's so interesting.
Cool.
How you can go from two different spectrums completely. You know,
And I never went to film school. They only had two film schools at the time, so I couldn't get into the two film schools. You had to have a political science degree, an art degree, and
close,
a political science.
Closer to the mic. Closer
I,
to
I
the
had
mic.
A political science degree. You needed an art degree, so I couldn't get into film school. So I just started making films. But back then when I started, there were only 200 films made. The year I made my first feature. Now there are 8,000 films were submitted to Sundance alone.
So. Are you serious? Wow. That's just 1 year alone, huh?
Yes, just 1 year.
Wow.
So there's like the tools for making films now are like vastly different because you needed big cameras and you could do 16mm, which is still around.
Right.
But so today it's been democratized to the point where everybody's making a film. Yeah. It doesn't mean they're good, you know.
Right. So is everything else. You know, everything is, everybody can do everything right now. And the thing is, there's a lot of garbage out there for sure, you know. But that's why it's getting harder, I think, especially in entertainment, to rise above all the noise, you know, and actually stand out and get noticed. And so you're saying there was only 200 films made that year.
Right. They went into theaters, 200 films. That's it. And today, you know, because you needed money, you needed raw stock and films. And, you know, there were no film schools when I started, really, a couple.
Right.
So
it was just the studio system, huh? Still.
Yeah. They had a B-movie system and they had, independent companies making these drive-in movies, which I was about. But nothing like where anybody can get a red camera and make a film for almost nothing, you know, and it's just flooded the whole world with thousands of these movies. And, you know, to me, it's analogous to painting where, you know, everybody can get an easel and paint something, but only a few people can paint sunflowers, you know.
Exactly,
It's
one thing to use the tool.
Exactly.
Exactly, you know. I mean, it's one thing to use the tool, to be able to use your tools, and another to create, you know, it's not the same thing, you know. People say, oh, I can use Photoshop, for example. Okay, but the stuff you make is garbage, you know. So it's, you know, you got to be creative as well when it comes to this stuff. You
think
know?
Outside the box.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the more outrageous, the better, you know, I always think, you know, the more edgy, the most out there.
Right.
For sure.
You know, you get noticed if it's controversial.
That's true. And you realized that early on with the Coquettes and stuff, right?
Yeah, I wanted to be as outrageous as possible. That film was like investigated by the White House and, you know. Like,
really?
They actually screened it in the basement of the White House, Richard Nixon. And he demanded the film be banned to his group. And they said, well, you'll make it so famous, the movie. You know, we can't tell them that we screened it.
Yeah.
So it was like when John Dean was indicted, he was like on Johnny Carson show. And he talked about how they screened Trisha's Wedding in the basement of the White House.
Really?
And Nixon wanted to suppress it. But we said, no, you'll make the film so famous. It's the First Amendment.
Yeah, that's true. Huh?
So, something like that. That's like super controversial.
Right.
I mean, even I myself haven't gone into like really, I'm not in controversial films now.
Right.
But
yeah.
I'd like to get
taking a risk like that is scary, but it's like the outcome could be so much more rewarding. It's like, why not? You know, push the boundaries a little bit. But
one of my kids, Jason Lester's graduated NYU Film School. So we got his first book, Taipei, by Tao Lin, who's like the Bret Easton Ellis at this time, and like less than zero. So he's just finished the script, but he wants to make that as his first film, and it's controversial book about, you know, young 20s in New York and the internet and computers and how people relate to all that. So that's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to keep filmmaking going.
Yeah, there you go.
So, keeping in the family.
So your dad wanted to get into filming. Was he happy that you did? get into film and things like that? Because you said nothing ever came out of his ambition.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
So he was happy for you. There you go, son. You know, make movies. That's good, because not many parents are like that, you know. They would go get a real job, you know.
No, it started when I was very young. And we actually, coming across the country, we stopped. He said, oh, my God, they're making a film in the desert.
Right.
And it was John Wayne shooting the Conqueror.
Wow.
Playing Genghis Khan, and they kept going around this rock, you know. And he said, yeah, look at all, they're using the same extras because the horses just keep coming around the rock. So we got off and we visited the set. We met John Wayne. We're sitting there. Oh, my God.
That's cool.
Yeah, and the whole cast died because of the radiation from the nuclear
testing. Wow, are you serious?
Yeah, it's a big, you know, it's a famous, like, story that they all worked next to the nuclear test facility in where they were. The above-ground atom bombs were going off in New Mexico.
Wow.
So, but we were only there a day, so luckily, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Nothing happened.
I didn't die of cancer.
Either. Yeah.
Oh, that's so scary. That's so sad.
It's a crazy story. But
jeez.
It is a crazy story. I mean, to take such a chance when you make a film, you know. I mean, it's not like you're creating rockets or something, for crying out loud. You know, you're just making a film.
They didn't know what was going on.
I imagine.
Yeah, back then. How would you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So it just has gone on. So I made my first film in 1971. What year are we in?
Yeah. We're 2013 now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I keep shooting. You're talking a long time.
Yeah.
But I was at the Cannes Film Festival last year, and Alain Renaud, who's like a famous, he did Last Year at Marienbad. Mm. He came to the festival with his last film, and he walked down the aisle. They gave him a standing ovation. He was 93.
Wow.
So I thought, you can keep going. Maybe I'll have to move to France. Yeah. Keep shooting.
Why not?
Yeah. So you started making your own films. And how did you proceed from there? I mean, you ended up with Commando, which was a major success. How did you end up from making your own independent films to that?
You know, an overnight success is 20 years, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So
that's why I'm trying to find out how it happened.
So I went through a whole series of, through the 70s, I made a whole series of movies, Bobby Joe and the Outlaw, Truck Stop Women, White House Madness, Stunts was New Line Cinema's first movie. I just met the star again. I ran into him, Robert Forster.
Really?
Because he later did Jackie Brown, and, you know, he's on a TV series now. Mm-hmm. So he was the star of that in 1977. So I was making these, you know, lower budget movies, and then I even did a TV movie you don't want to see called Gold of the Amazon Women. Ekberg was starting the Fellini's La Dolce Vita one. So then I ended up, you know, doing a movie called Roller Boogie in 1979 with Linda Blair. That was a modest hit open.
Right. And she was from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she was hot at the time, right?
Yeah, big star, but she was under a drug conviction, and the only one would hire her was me.
Really?
It was perfect. She was great lady, did fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
She got over that period. That's why, you know, I got her right after The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And then I did a movie called Class of 1984. So this movie was like a big hit. It grossed like $40 million. And it was about high school violence in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And very controversial movie. It was like highly publicized. And it was before, I'm looking at Notre Dame High School here, before they had to put gates on that high school.
Right.
And you know, it was about bringing guns to school and so forth. Very ahead of its time. And that movie, you know, it was seen by Dino De Laurentiis. Mm-hmm. So after he saw the movie, he called me, says, I'm doing this movie, Firestarter, with Universal. So he hired me to do that movie.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, that was like a big $20 million studio movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that was a big movie. I mean,
yeah, that was like a regular Universal release.
Who was it, like Christopher Walken and Drew Barrymore? No, who was the father?
It was George C. Scott, Keith, and Drew
David
Barrymore.
Keith was the father, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Art Carney was his last movie. He was great.
Yeah.
And it was like there were 8 Academy Award winning actors in it, like the most ever in a movie.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. So you must have felt good. You felt you arrived.
Yeah, I arrived. And a couple weeks later, I went to the Playboy Mansion, you know, in my pajamas.
Oh, wow. So you definitely arrived.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, this is like from a slum in Euclid, Ohio. Uh-huh. I'm at the Playboy Mansion in my pajamas. And I was sitting next to Joel Silver, who's like, you know, famous producer.
Uh-huh.
And we started to talk, you know. He says, oh, you did that first. Yeah, I'm doing this movie. We don't have a script. You know, if you have to read the script, don't do the movie, you know. I said, okay, who's in it? Arnold Schwarzenegger. All right. So I said, I'm in. If he's in the movie, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, who would say no to that?
I don't need to read the script.
It's Arnold.
Put him up on the screen.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got the picture, really. And,
right.
You know, I went in and they made the film. You know, the film was made and it was a huge hit.
Right. Now, Commando, was that made after the first Terminator?
Right after the first
After the first Terminator. Yeah, I remember that because that's when he became really big.
Yeah, he had done Conan, the Terminator, and then this film.
Right. And then he had that alien movie. What was it called?
Predator.
Predator. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, those are the couple of movies that he came out after the Terminator and stuff. So he was big. I mean, you must have enjoyed working with him, right?
Was,
I mean, what's he like?
Fabulous guy.
Yeah?
Fabulous.
He's nice?
Yeah, he was wonderful. At the time, he had only done like a few movies, so he was like
very
easy to work
still
with.
Still humble and stuff, huh?
Yeah, I guess he still is, you know, apparently.
That I don't know about, you know. But he's getting up there in age, you know, and it's amazing, though, because, you know, we still look to our stars to continue looking young and making their movies, you know. I mean, you look at Sylvester Stallone, for example, you know, people want another Rocky, another Rambo. But, I mean, they're getting old, these guys, you know. I mean,
they keep making Indiana Jones with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, it's not convincing.
It's like,
that he's
I can't used to do the stunts like I used to so easily.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it used to be believable that he can take out virtually the entire Vietnamese army, you know. But now it's like, I don't know, man.
The Expendables, they look pretty good, those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. But it looks kind of weird, though, you know. I don't know. They're... You know, I think
it's cool. I like that.
It is
still,
cool. It is cool, but it's not as believable, I don't think.
You know? Right. But, hey, it's a film, you know? It's about using your imagination.
Yeah, they're supposed to be old guys, you know, trying to come back.
Right. So did you develop a friendship with Arnold at all?
I still know him. Sure.
Really?
Great, yeah.
You guys still in touch and stuff?
Yeah.
That's cool, huh?
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah.
Did you vote for him?
Of course, yeah. He's like the only Republican I ever voted for.
Yeah. I know, I voted for him too, because at the time, we were really disillusioned with our governor.
Yeah.
And so everybody thought, okay, Arnold, let's put him in, you know. Never mind that he did not a great job, you know, but, you know, he tried, you know, he tried. I don't think California could have been saved by anyone at that point, you know.
I know this governor. I know Jerry Brown. I used to double date with him. He stole one of my girlfriends. And stole
really?
Oh.
How did you meet Jerry Brown?
I met him in the Young Democrats. He had just come out of a seminary. You know, he was in a priesthood. And, and he came out he was only like, he was like 22 and I was like 16. And then we became chairman of youth for Pat Brown, his father, you know. So. We were like co-chairman in California.
Wow.
We used to hang out at Pat Brown's house with Jerry Brown.
And
colorful guy.
Yeah.
Guy. Yeah.
And but, what's amazing that he was able to make a comeback after all these years, you know. I mean, he was like governor when I moved to California, like in the 70s, right? And now he's back.
He's totally brilliant. He's brilliant. He's very intellectual. Brilliant.
But he was gone for a while. I mean, you didn't hear from him for like 20 years or something. And then suddenly he was running again. And I was surprised to see him again, you know. But he did it. And he dated Linda Ronstadt, right? And Jane Fonda and all those famous women. Yeah.
Wow. So then, after that Commando, then I did, you know, a whole another series of movies. And,
right. So, Commando, was that like a major studio? Or
yeah, that
was
a 20th Century Fox.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So obviously, I mean, so you knew the guy that hired you to do the film, right? Oh, Dino De Laurentiis.
That was Firestarter, yeah.
Right.
Fox was run by
Right, but how did you get the Commando gig?
At the Playboy Mansion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you met what, the producer or something?
Yeah, the producer was sitting next to me in his pajamas.
It's all about the right place and the right time and the right people. That's Hollywood.
Right, that's why I still go to a lot of parties, you know. I'm still looking for another pajama party.
Yeah.
You want somewhere.
I went to a onesie party on Friday.
A
onesie party where you wear like with the footies and the hood.
Oh,
and everybody's in PJs, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
That was a real PJ party. I mean, it was just at a nice apartment. It wasn't at the Playboy Mansion or anything. But
let me know.
There's nothing sexy about our PJs, let me tell you.
Yeah. Let Mark know. He'll go. Yeah.
Playboy Mansion. It's not the same thing.
No, I know.
It doesn't matter. A party is a party, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, then I did a picture, Armed and Dangerous, with it was Meg Ryan's first movie, John Candy.
Right.
It was a Columbia picture, and then...
Right, it was a comedy, right?
Yeah, comedy.
Yeah.
Then I did Showdown Little Tokyo. It was Brandon Lee. I found him in Hong Kong and brought him back to the United States.
Really?
Oh, wow.
His first movie.
Really? Brandon Lee's first movies?
Yeah.
First movie.
He had done a Hong Kong martial arts film, and I saw it, and I...
So you contacted him and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, I got him his first movie.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and cool. I started doing, you know... I started turning movies out. Like someone said, you should do it like spaghetti. Just keep shooting them out of your camera.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I mean, you've made a lot of them. So how many films have you made so far? Did you count?
Oh, man, I was trying to figure it out. But yeah. I've directed 35 movies.
Wow.
As a director. But I produced another 20 movies or something, you know. So that's because sometimes I didn't, you know, if I didn't direct them all, like I started like having other people direct them.
Yeah.
But now I'm just, this year I directed two movies, so I'm gearing up for a movie onslaught, like, so beware.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're still as productive as ever.
Yeah I've got like I have a movie planned called Trainwreck. It's going to be a, you know, a train disaster movie shooting. And another one, a Viking movie, and then this Taipei I'm going to help Jason get, you know, going on his first movie. And then I've got a remake of Class of 1984, which I did. So
that's nice. So you got a lot of things going on, huh?
Yeah, I just have to keep going. I have to keep shooting.
Yeah. What was the Class of 94? Was that like a comedy about college or high school?
That was a high school, about high school violence, about a teacher. Yeah. Perry King comes to a high school and as a pacifist, kind of nice teacher. And there's a gang that controls the school.
Mm.
Timothy Van Patten. It was Michael J. Fox's first movie. He's the good kid in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aww.
Wow, that's pretty good.
So it was 1982.
Right.
But it's now, a when cult movie today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check out some of your movies, you know, because, I mean, I'm like a sort of like a big studio type of movie goer, but I'd love to see all these movies, you know, because I'm really disillusioned with all the movies out there today. I mean, yes, there are some good ones, but the rest is just like special effects.
Tentpole movies.
Right.
And then,
you know, and then you have special effects and explosions and car chases and all that. And it's like you want something else, you know. And the other night I watched a French film.
Oh.
And it was pretty cool, actually. It was very cool. And, it was pretty sexy, too. You know, it took place like in a whorehouse and stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But
classy.
It was a sort of a classy movie. It was like it took place like way back when, like maybe 200, 300 years ago, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay.
So it showed you. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so I started looking for like smaller movies and stuff because, again, you know, I think a lot of the major studios is just a formula, you know, and more for youngsters. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, I was happy to see this Wolf of Wall Street, which I've seen twice already. It's 3 hours long.
Really?
Martin Scorsese.
Uh-huh.
I thought, like, it's amazing because it reminded me of these B movies of the 70s. There's so much nudity and sex and drugs.
Right.
And, it's like way out there. And I was going, wow, you know, this is great because it's a studio movie.
Uh-huh.
But it harks back to that.
Right.
I actually ran into Scorsese like last year.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to him. I had never met him, you know, actually in person.
Right.
And I said, geez, Marty, I said, I made a movie like 1976 called Bobby Joe and the Outlaw. And it was released the same day as Taxi Driver. So in those, there was only twin theaters. So every theater had Taxi Driver on one side and Bobby Joe and the Outlaw on the other.
Oh, God.
And when I went to the theater, there was a line around the block. I was, like, so excited. When I got there, it was for your movie, Taxi Driver. Like, my theater was, like, there was a quarter full, you know?
Yeah.
He goes, that's amazing because I went to theater. I thought the line was for your movie. I didn't think anybody was going to see Taxi Driver.
Wow. And the Taxi Driver made history, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you never know, you know? You never know how it's going to turn out. And Martin Scorsese is Martin Scorsese, you know.
He's,
I mean,
a genius.
He gets and he gets the attention and stuff, you know. And that was Robert De Niro's debut, pretty much. I mean, that was the first time I've seen him. Had he done any movies before?
In Taxi Driver.
Robert De Niro, yeah.
He was in Mean Streets.
Come before that?
Yeah, that was Scorsese's low budget kind of.
I see. Okay, so I must have been too young for that one. But Taxi Driver was a memorable movie. It was really cool. Have you ever seen it?
I feel like I've seen parts of it. I know what you're talking about,
for
sure.
Yeah, you got to see it, man.
Definitely before my time. But.
Yeah. But Robert De Niro does a great job on it. You know, Cape Fear also, he did a great job on that one. I don't know if you've seen it, but he always plays the, you know, the crazy guy. He's so good at it. That's why it's so funny to see him now in those family parts, you know, where he's married to Barbara Streisand and meet the parents and all that stuff, you know.
But the thing that's great today about filmmaking for young people, you know, you can get out there, get a camera, make a film. There's so many outlets, you know, you can go on YouTube and Hulu.
Right.
There's so many outlets for movies.
Right.
You know, it's amazing.
So if all this technology was available when you got started, obviously you would have been able to make a lot more sophisticated films, let's say, as far as the technology and stuff, right?
Well, I don't know. No, because I was using 16-millimeter cameras or 35-millimeter cameras.
Right.
It was such a different era when I started that I don't know that I even would have existed in this right. way, because the, you know, the competition wasn't as
fierce.
Right. No, I mean, now it's just mind-boggling.
Right.
Like you say, the amount of product, the amount of people making films. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I made, like, Truck Stop Women, I mean, it sounds like a silly movie, but it was... You know, the LA Times had an article about me. You know,
really?
I mean, it was like nowadays, you know, like you could make some lower budget film. Nobody would even think about it, you know.
So yeah.
Right, yeah.
Getting noticed is really difficult. It's all just fragmented into a million pieces out there.
So what about Truck Stop Women? I mean, what is that film about? I mean, obviously the name says everything, you know, just like Snakes on a Plane, you know.
Okay.
I've seen the name, I've seen the movie, you know.
Right.
Go ahead.
It was a, you know, a comedy about, you know, women who work at a truck stop in New Mexico and hijack trucks.
Really?
Yeah, for the mafia. But I shot it in CinemaScope because then, you know, you could.
Wow.
People said, I thought I was making a low budget, cost $250,000, but people said, oh yeah, you were the guy making like really expensive low budget films.
Right.
Because most of them were like, at the time where Roger Corman movies were $50,000. So they
said,
no wonder it looks so good.
You know, yeah.
They screened it at the Egyptian theater like last year, and it was like, I couldn't believe it myself because I couldn't make it today for $2 million. It was like truck chases and everything was cheaper, you know.
Wow. So how did you learn all this stuff? I mean, you just said you started making films, but and you didn't go to school for it. So, I mean, how do you learn how to make a film? You know, I mean, it was tough.
On the set, you know, just like learning from the people that were there and reading books and just, you know, through the process of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a girlfriend at the time. She said, yeah, don't worry. As you need to know each thing, you'll figure it out, you know.
Right.
And I took that advice because that's what it really what it was. Each time I needed to learn something, I'd ask somebody or figure it out.
Wow.
Yeah, experiencing it yourself, I feel like, is the best way to learn anything, even like a language or something. You know, you're thrown into somewhere that, you know, they don't speak English. You're forced to speak their language. It's like you learn that the best rather than any class you can ever take, you know.
Right.
So
yeah,
I believe that for sure.
Yeah. So you just by learning and hanging around people and stuff, right? And then people started tapping your talent for...
Yeah, I had a talent because I was also running this little local, like a Berkeley repertory cinema. Mm-hmm. So I was seeing every movie, you know, that was running through there. There was a guy, Tom Luddy, that was there, and he now runs the Telluride Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And So I was in like this little film community I'd met. And so I was studying film on my own at the time. And then... I just started, you know, learning as I was going.
Right.
And this film, Trisha's Wedding, was so successful right away. I thought, you know, great. And then I was really an Andy Warhol fan. So I thought, like, so I was distributing these Andy Warhol movies in Berkeley, and he was sending the movies there, like, you know, Nude Restaurant and, you know, Lonesome Cowboy and Trash and Heat. He had all these movies.
Yeah.
Andy Warhol actually directed 80 films. People don't realize
that. Wow, no, I didn't realize that at all.
Yeah. And so I was playing these films for him, you know, in Berkeley, renting halls and playing these films. And so I thought, wow, I could become like a pop Andy Warhol. And when I started making these films, even the reviews said, oh, he's like a pop Andy Warhol. So I was like quite happy that I had succeeded in like creating this new kind of, you know, pop art film.
That's true.
It was very comic booky and very, you know, Americana. So that's how I got, like, initially. And then later when Kubrick did, like, Clockwork Orange, then I thought, oh, I'll steal his stuff, you know.
So you made a movie like that?
Copying shots, like in Class of 84, there's shots in the movie that are identical to Clockwork
Orange.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was, like, picking up all this, like, information from, you know, other filmmakers and artists, and then you make your own right. thing out of it. But, mm-hmm. you know, people still operating that way, you know, yeah. to some mm-hmm. extent.
No, that's true. I mean, you yeah. get inspiration. If you don't copy or plagiarize, at least you get some kind of inspiration, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, it's hard to really, like, start something new. You know what I mean? Once something's popular, it's like, just kind of jump on the bandwagon. Cause yeah. it'll keep you going because that's what everybody's interested in right now.
Yeah.
There can't just be one of every different, you know, type of thing.
So I know. Tell me about it. Everybody's copying and stealing our website and everything that we do. And but so not a lot of originality and creativity out there, but a lot of people stealing and stuff. But you know,
well,
you borrowed.
Spin it into something new. You know?
Exactly.
You use all that stuff and
yeah.
make something new out of it.
No, absolutely. You know, and if you made a film that can stand on its own, even when you borrowed some scenes from another movie, then more kudos to you. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You pulled it off, you know. So now, during all this time, did you have any time for family, things like this? Did you get married? Did you have kids?
I didn't get married till like much later. I was like, you know,
really?
Yeah, and then I was married like 18 years. I have three kids.
Oh, you have three kids?
Yeah.
What age did you get married at?
I got married at 45.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Too much fun in Hollywood.
I bet. Yeah. My God.
You Warning know. To Hollywood filmmakers.
Exactly. Don't go to Hollywood if you want to get married,
young.
Right?
No, I mean, it's so true. Nobody
busy.
Really gets married out here. Everybody's so focused on their career. It's like you want to get to a certain point before you can, you know what I mean, be willing to, like, give half of yourself,
right.
you know, to, like, a spouse or children.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
That was his career, like, you know, I didn't know, just having fun. Making films, I didn't really
you
want
didn't
to
stop
get married.
For,
I didn't want mm-hmm. to get married, and then all of a sudden, I wanted to have kids and get married. Like just
right.
one day, it hit me.
Yeah,
you know?
Were you getting a lot of sex from being in the film industry and stuff like that? I mean, being a director
yeah.
and all that.
That I mean, that's like
probably
the reason,
because
the
if you wait
people
until
become
25,
directors,
there you go.
I know people that have business cards I hand out. They say, "Oh, I'm a director," just to try to get girls to sleep with them, and they're like,
the
"I don't
town
know."
Is full of them, yeah.
Working at the as a clerk at the local convenience store, you know. I'm like, "Oh, I'm a director."
It still works, I guess, right? But yeah. I don't know. I have to tell you honestly, when I was yeah. like, you know, in 30 years ago, you could go on a movie set and have sex with everybody.
Really? Wow.
You know, now, like, I'm in Wales, and the sex is going to, like, the young knights I had in the
yeah.
film. Go, hey, I'm going to fire you guys. Stop already.
Now, Mark, did you do any acting at all? I mean, did you ever have interest in acting?
In high school, I was like the star of the high school play.
I see, but
yeah.
not in films, right?
No, I never, yeah. no, never.
You liked it behind the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing. Well, tell people where they can find out more about you. You also have a company. We didn't even discuss it. Titan Global Entertainment, right? Tell us quickly about the company.
Well, we're making films like these films. Some, you know, are going through there. Some will, some won't. And then we're also distributing other people's movies.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you can go on the website, Titan Global Entertainment, and then you can contact us if you have a film, you know, that needs distribution.
Oh, wow. That's a good
yeah,
thing.
So we just, you know, I've distributed the course of all this, like, in 1993, I started a company that was going to distribute and make films, you know, primarily my own. But after about,
right.
you know, 5 or 6 years, I couldn't make enough films to sustain, like, distribution. I made, like, 10 movies with Lionsgate that I directed.
Uh-huh.
And then it wasn't enough, and I was distributing them with them. But then I had to acquire other pictures. So over the course of the years, I released 200 movies of
wow.
other people's films.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So now it's going to be more selective, but if you have something good, we'll see it.
Sounds good. Well, there's awesome. A lot of aspiring movie makers here in L.A., so I'm sure some people might find it interesting to contact you. Mark L. Lester, thank you so much for joining us. You're definitely a lot of fun. And
Yeah.
I loved it. My pleasure. Anytime.
I guess I waited for a response.
Good talk, fellas.
Yeah.
Good
all
talk,
right.
guys.
Okay. Okay, Mark. Thanks for joining us. Mia, thank you. Thanks,
hey.
Everybody, for listening.
We'll see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.